It's Thursday, April 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, U.S. presidential frontrunners are indeed in front after big New York wins.
There is a bit of a tension, and that tension is going to be quite visible during this visit.
President Obama visits Saudi Arabia amid growing strains. Ahead, financial markets near all-time records. Do you trust the media? And music news from Down Under. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. presidential frontrunners Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton scored big wins in New York late Tuesday. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone joins us now as they're looking to lock up their respective parties' nominations.
Yeah, absolutely. Could be a crucial moment in both of the races, actually. For Donald Trump on the Republican side, it was an opportunity to kind of reset the race in his favor, to regain momentum. It looks as though the new campaign team that he has working for him is having an impact. He seems more disciplined as a candidate right now. I was just watching him give a speech in Indiana. He's toned it down a little bit right now. I think he's starting to realize that he, as long as he continues to do well in these primaries, he's on track to be the nominee. The question remains strategically, can he get the 1,237 delegates he needs before they get to the national convention in Cleveland in July? They definitely want to avoid a contested convention because it becomes somewhat unknown what will happen beyond the first ballot. And rival Ted Cruz has been out there lining up support of delegates who in the first ballot may support Trump, but who could switch to Cruz later on.
There has been a lot of talk about that second ballot and what might happen at the convention if it goes that way. Mathematically, what does Trump have to do to get to the magic number ahead of the convention? Does he have a realistic chance?
You know, I'd say after winning, say, 90 of the 95 delegates at stake in New York, he has a better chance than he did before, but he's still not got a lock on it. The key here, I think, is beyond the math and the delegate count, he needs to create an aura of invincibility and the fact that Republicans need to get behind him to have a chance to win in November. They need to rally around his candidacy. They need to recognize him as the likely nominee. And even if he is a few delegates short when they get to the convention, the chances are if they feel that momentum, he'll be able to scoop up a few what we call unbound Republican delegates at that time. But any stumbles along the way could mess up his strategy. And the next potential issue is not in a week where we have five northeastern states, but probably in 2 weeks when Indiana votes. And that's why Trump was in Indiana on Wednesday.
Well, among the Democrats, it has been pretty much between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders for this entire run. After New York, it looks like that's pretty much the end of the road for Bernie as far as his hopes of gaining the nomination.
Yeah, the mathematical possibilities just seem astronomical for him. To win enough delegates, he'd have to win the remaining primaries and contests by more than 60%. I mean, that hasn't been happening. I think what's to watch for now is how the Clinton and Sanders camp interact with one another. It got very nasty during the New York primary campaign. They need his supporters come the fall campaign, particularly his appeal to independent voters, something that Clinton's been struggling with, and young people. Clinton does very well with people 45 years of age and older, but she's been really having a difficult time with younger Democrats and independents, something that Sanders has really been able to key into. It's been a real crucial part of his appeal. They need to see if they can tap into that moving forward.
Doing extremely well with all of the demographics and explaining this to us is our senior VOA national correspondent, Jim Malone. Jim, thank you for stopping by.
Always a pleasure.
And because it comes down to all the mathematics at this point, it would all add up now if we take into account our social media segment. And we do that with International Edition's G. Abby Lee, who joins me in the studio with what's buzzing online about our top story. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
What's trending?
Let's start with a Democratic primary. The Hill, a political website, reported Hillary Clinton may have declared winner of the New York primary, but Bernie Sanders defeated the former NY senator in nearly every state county, including Albany County, home of the state's capital. The top comment to that post on Facebook reads like this: nearly half a million people in the area have been projected to have had their voter registration changed about 5 days ago. These results are pretty messed up. Not that the mainstream media cares. They probably won't even report on the voter suppression, considering drawing attention to it could only help Sanders. More than 1,000 people liked that comment. Others still focus on the fact that Clinton won. One person wrote, "Votes are the only means of declaring a winner. Counties don't matter. Sanders won in most of the counties in New York with around 60%. But 60% of 333 people is not the same as winning with 60% in a district that has more than 100,000 people. And of course, Jim, he's referring to New York City, where Clinton won every district.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure there's some buzz on the Republican side as well.
There is. And the key word, like Jim mentioned earlier, among the three GOP contenders appears to be mathematically. Ted Cruz first used that word in an interview to imply that John Kasich does not stand a chance and should drop out of the race. The other contenders are now using that word and running with it. After winning big in New York, Donald Trump tweeted, "Ted Cruz is mathematically out of winning the race." Now all he can do is be a spoiler, never a nice thing to do. "I will beat Hillary." John Kasich tweeted, "Now that Cruz is, get this, mathematically eliminated, the only difference between him and Kasich is that Kasich can defeat Clinton." In addition to referring himself in the third person, I just want to mention that tweet had an extra "now" in the sentence, which is never a nice thing to do either. Also trending at this hour is the news of slavery abolitionist Harriet Tubman scheduled to replace former President Andrew Jackson as a new face on $20 bills in America. Back to you, Jim.
Well, that would be a lot of fun to look forward to. Thank you for that analysis, G. She tweets for our program's account at VOA_IE. Also from her own account at G. Abby Lee. I'm out there on Twitter as well at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. President Obama is in Saudi Arabia, where he has held talks with King Salman, and he is to attend a six-nation Gulf Cooperation Council summit in Riyadh on Thursday. Ties with Washington's traditional Gulf allies have been strained since last year's international nuclear agreement with Iran. The U.S. and the Saudis also remain divided over the political future of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and Riyadh is concerned over U.S. legislation allowing the families of the victims of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks to sue the kingdom in court. Middle East Institute regional scholar Zubir Iqbal told VOA's Victor Beatty that the change in the U.S.-Saudi relationship can be traced back to the so-called U.S. pivot to the Asia-Pacific region that was announced in 2011.
Now, quite clearly, Saudi Arabia still remains the largest single buyer of military equipment and weapons from the United States. Its priorities have changed. Similarly, the U.S. priorities have changed. So the result is that even when they broadly agree on the objectives, because the priorities have changed, there is a bit of a tension. And that tension is going to be quite visible during this visit for two reasons. First of all, the Saudi authorities are looking at it as Mr. Obama being a lame duck president, that he is on his way out. They don't have to take any firm decisions and make any commitments to him. They can wait and see who takes over from him and then go on from there. The second issue is that they're still quite miffed by the Iran nuclear arrangement. They implicitly feel as if there is some sort of a natural alliance between the United States and Iran, more so than the tactical alliance or the strategic alliance that exists between Saudi Arabia or existed between Saudi Arabia and the United States.
In an article in The Atlantic magazine, the president said Saudi Arabia and its nemesis Iran need to, quote, share the neighborhood. He also described the Gulf countries as free riders that show an unwillingness to put any skin in the game when it comes to their own regional security. Is that going to cause problems?
Oh, certainly. It has already caused problems. The Saudis are a country that depends upon an understanding and faith in relationships and friendships. If that gets violated, they lose faith completely. Even if these Americans were to now lean over backward to accommodate and be understanding towards them, they will be always now looking over their shoulder, which means they will increasingly move towards doing something whereby they can reduce reliance on the United States against their own desire. They actually wanted to maintain that very close, very strategic relationship. But I have a feeling that this relationship could very well now start to weaken.
Do you expect anything concrete to come out of this summit?
Not much. It will be nice words. There will be some polite statements here and there. There will also be some generalities with respect to commitments and common interests. But I don't think there will be any fundamental changes, for the simple reason that the interests are diverging. Priorities are different. Even when the objectives are the same, priorities are different.
This trip is President Obama's fourth to the region since he took office in 2009. U.S. financial markets continue to reach higher, and they're hovering just below record levels. VOA economic correspondent Jill Malandrino joins us from New York to tell us what's fueling this rally.
You know what, Jim? We know that the market trend can change in a New York minute. And it's quite astounding that we are just about 1% away from making all-time highs in the S&P 500. Some of the trends that contributed to this bullish action has been energy, perhaps, is the biggest motivator here, as oil prices have recovered about 40% since the February 11th low. In fact, it hit a 2016 high just this afternoon. And even though supply remains at record levels, a couple analysts I speak with believe that perhaps supply has peaked and that Saudi Arabia is finally starting to feel the squeeze as they are looking to access the capital markets. Another contributing factor is recovering the financial sector.
Well, corporate profits are a little bit low in some places, as we've heard, and, you know, the prices are getting higher. Are traders going to be more willing to buy at this point, or will the trend keep going?
Right. You know what? Traders I speak with, they acknowledge there's a lot of mixed signals in the market. Interest rates are low. How can banks grow, right? There's still a big supply in the oil markets. We've yet to see any product drawdown. So that's your bearish argument right there. The bullish side is that this could be the worst quarter. The worst of it is over, and expectations are still pretty good for the remainder of the year. But we have a saying on Wall Street, and as traders, we say, don't fight the tape. Because if you've been a bear since a February 11th low, chances are you aren't trading much anymore.
We're always trading in the best information from Jill Malandrino from New York. Jill, thanks for joining us today.
All right, thank you.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
We are always happy to have you spend time with us each day on International Edition, and we hope that's because you find our program interesting and informative. We do see that here in the United States, trust in the media has declined sharply. So, we've asked International Business Times reporter Max Willens to help explain this. Based on his recent article, public trust in news media nears an all-time low.
The bedrock of the story that I wrote is a piece of research that was published by the Media Insights Project, which is a partnership that was set up between the Associated Press and the American Press Institute. And they found that a pretty low percentage of the American population has a great deal of confidence in the media business. That number is just 6%, which is lower than the advertising industry. It's lower than the banking industry. It's lower than basically everything other than Congress, which comes in at 4%. The thing that comes out of the research that they did is that a lot of the distrust has to do with people thinking that the stories that they read out there either aren't presented with a lot of fairness or even-handedness, or there's a certain sort of bias. And a lot of it also, somewhat surprisingly, boils down to the presentation of it. There were a lot of people that felt like their visits to websites to get news featured a lot of invasive advertising or things that were presented in a way that wasn't clear. And it's all very worrisome when you consider the fact that an awful lot of the American public does turn increasingly to digital sources to get their news. And it's something that a publisher should be thinking about very seriously.
This is digital versus perhaps listening to the radio or watching television?
There was a lot of focus on digital as being distinct from television or radio or newspapers for those that still read them. But the overall issue of even-handedness or a lack of bias cut across all the mediums, really.
Were there things about the media amid all of this distrust that perhaps the public liked?
Well, one thing that looks positive, that you could take away as a positive, is that it does seem like people are consuming lots of information in a lot of different places. A majority of Americans get some form of news from a number of different places multiple times a week, whether that means catching something on the radio or seeing something in their Facebook feed or reading a magazine or newspaper or voluntarily visiting a website. And that's something that's certainly a positive thing that you could point to, and it's important that people be informed and get information from as many sources as possible. So if you're looking for positives, that's certainly one of them.
Information that the public can definitely trust. International Business Times reporter Max Willens. Max, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Jim.
Well, in many places online and in social media, you can find Australian pop star Iggy Azalea, who's up to something new, as International Edition host Susan Yockey noticed. So she invited VOA Border Crossings host Larry London to the studio to find out more. Iggy Azalea is from Australia. She has been on the music scene for several years now, although she, you know, says that she's been rapping and making music for many years. But she was discovered with her big chart hit called Fancy several years ago. She was supposed to go on tour last year. The tour ended up being canceled. She wasn't very happy with the outcome of the album, so she delayed the release of the album. Her new album is called Digital Distortion. It is due out in a few months, and she's also announced that she will be rescheduling the tour that was canceled, so she hopes to go out on the road and promote the new album, Digital Distortion. She has been in the news a lot lately because of her relationship with a Los Angeles Laker professional basketball player whose name is Nick Young, who admitted that he cheated on Iggy.
Oh, you've always got the best stories.
I've got the dirt. So she hasn't been seen with her wedding engagement ring on recently, and she was asked just this week, what's the status of your relationship? And on Monday she tweeted, we are still together, we are still a couple. We're sorting things out, and I would ask that everyone respect my privacy at this very delicate, sensitive time.
Yes, I can understand that. Well, there's one song in particular you like.
Well, I like all of Iggy Azalea's stuff,
But the new song that's made it to the charts from her upcoming album is a song called Team.
It's my time wherever I go. I took a chance, like I'm from Chicago. 100 plus in a Murcielago. About to go, turn it to the taco.
Well, tell us a little bit about this song.
Well, it's got a lot of hip-hop and some rap. She's got a guest rapper on the song with her, and that's very typical of what Iggy does. She's guested with a number of different performers over the years. She's performed along with Ariana Grande and quite a few others. And so this new song is the first single from the upcoming album, Digital Distortion. I'm looking forward to the album. It's been a year in the making. She wasn't pleased with it originally, so she reworked a bunch of songs, and so now the new album's coming out.
Well, if she's so particular, she should be particular about her men, too, maybe.
Well, yes, and but her man cheated on her. That's the story, and he admitted it on video. Now, there's a bit of a controversy as to who leaked the video. There was a story that Nicki Minaj was behind leaking that video.
She comes out all over the place.
Yeah, she's a tattletale. Well, yeah, Nicki Minaj is everywhere. But anyway, I like Iggy Azalea. Iggy Azalea was also quoted recently as saying one of the ways that she got through the stressful situation of what's been going on is horseback riding.
Huh.
And she went horseback riding with a music friend of hers who's also been going through a stressful situation, Kesha. So the two of them have kind of buddied up. And they've been horseback riding as of late. But exciting times for Iggy Azalea from Australia. Her new album's about to be released.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry. Always love for you to come on by.
Well, thank you, Susan.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com and on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Belize Carlos Moreno and the Right Honorable Prime Minister Dean Barrow recently signed the 16th Amendment to the Letter of Agreement implementing the International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, or INL, program through the Central America Regional Security Initiative, or CARSI. The U.S. government has provided over $35 million in programs and grants to Belize through CARSI since 2008. The agreement provides $6,450,000 in funding to be used for the following projects: improved border inspection, vetted units, capacity enhancement, justice sector reform, and community policing. To date, the U.S. government, through INL, has committed a total of $28.4 million since 2008 to these programs in Belize. In addition to INL programs, the U.S. Embassy has also provided over $6 million in CARSI Economic Support Fund grants to local and international NGOs operating in Belize. Programs have included entrepreneurship, vocational training and job placement, after-school activities, educational assistance, skills training, and arts and culture. Another $1.2 million will be issued as grants again this year. INL CARSI programs have assisted police nationwide with trainings and equipment. Through this programming, the Belize Police Department has dramatically improved mobility and taken major steps toward modernization, including case management and evidence handling. INL CARSI has also focused on the concept of community policing, both within the police and in communities. In areas with active U.S.-funded neighborhood watch and community policing programs, local police stations have reported decreases in burglaries and other crimes. The INL CARSI program continues to support safer streets and more resilient communities in Belize. Ongoing efforts will enhance capacity throughout Belize with programs in forensics, prosecution, and the judiciary. INL CARSI continues to support law enforcement agencies as well as community-led programs. The United States government is proud to support citizen security in Belize, a country which shares our values of democracy, human rights, and rule of law.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.